Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Knapsack, and this is Force Center episode 125. It's like that 23-year high school reunion. It means something, but it's not a big number. But I know some people who mean something to you and me. It's Joseph Scrimshaw and Jennifer Landa.
I'm going to say that I think this episode is going to be better than a 23rd high school reunion. I get where I think the metaphor works, but I think this is so much better than a high school reunion doing
so
this
much
podcast.
Better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Unlike my high school reunion, first of all, I am here, and second of all, I am happy to be here.
Well, that's a second conversation. You've never been?
Never.
I've been to two, and I have a great time.
Really?
I don't know what, and I didn't enjoy high school any more than anyone else.
Oh.
I guess I just watched Gross Point Blank too many times.
Yeah.
I was looking for a fight at my reunion.
Oh, man, if I had thought to do it, I would have specifically watched Gross Point Blank on my high school reunion, which I didn't go to, because we didn't even have a specific one. It's just every year it's been like, if you've ever been to this place, why don't you come and mingle with people who are 10 years younger than you and 40 years older than you. What fun.
Oh,
fun.
My
wow, that's like one of those weird schools that has, not your school, but like a school that has like 6 through 12, like 6th grade through 12th grade,
yes.
All in one room.
Right.
We're on the prairie here. Well, enough about High School Reunion Center. This is Force Center, where we talk about Star Wars, celebrate the galaxy from the very center of it. And today we're going to be talking about Padme. We talk about Padme a lot, just in passing, how much we enjoy this character, think it's underrated, think she's underrated, all those good things. But we're going to really take a deep dive into that. But first, as always, I'd like to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later in the show, we'll have our Force Center recommends. Before we dive in on this 125th edition, the week ends with San Diego Comic-Con, Joseph.
And that's right.
News up top about what you and I will be doing.
Yeah, we got a show that we'll be doing with Mark Ellis and a bunch of other amazing comedians, all of whom are kind of in the genre world. That's on Friday at 10 o'clock. You and I both have other things going on. But in particular, for Force Center, we are doing a little meetup like we did last year, and that is going to be Friday at 4 p.m., and we will release exactly where on our social media, so be sure to follow us on Force Center. At Force Center Pod, if you want to know exactly where. It's not going to be like a hunt. It's not going to be like...
It's like a Force Center scavenger hunt.
Yeah, you don't have to like cosplay as Bosk and say, where are they? I will find them.
That's great. Great Bosk, too, by the way. Yeah.
Battlefront 2.
Going to be fun. We're going to figure it out. We're going to be fluid there. Now, Jennifer, of course, you are not going to be at Comic-Con this year. That's a bit of a change for you.
It is a bit of a change. I don't know what happened. We scheduled a family vacation the weekend of Comic-Con. I was like, this is a perfect week. Oh, darn it.
Yeah, in fact, there was an email from you about another thing. Like, I'm not available these dates. And they were exactly the dates of Comic-Con. So I was like, wow, Jennifer is really committing to Comic-Con this year.
Oh, my gosh.
I think it was the will of the Force. I think the Force was whispering to you and saying, no. Go somewhere peaceful.
Go to wine country. So that's where I will be.
Quite a change of pace. We'll be fighting to cross those train tracks.
Yes.
To get to the convention hall, and you'll be sipping wine on a nice winery somewhere.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll miss you guys.
We'll try to Skype you in at the meetup.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Sipping wine.
I'd like to appear as a hologram.
Got it. We'll work on it.
That's awesome. As we like to do, we'll have to catch up between us and see if there's any Star Wars adventure. So all wings report in. Did you get to do anything fun in Star Wars this week, Joseph?
Yeah, kind of in the last week and a half since we recorded. I was at the convention Convergence in Minneapolis that I go to every year. And man, it's always fun. Great fun. I did a big show. Talked a lot about our experience at the Solo Denny's event in my stand-up show. And people loved that. Talked about the Blaster Fire Burger. But the cosplay, it's amazing to watch the cosplay of Star Wars in particular grow at a convention like Convergence, because Convergence this year was about 6,000 people, a little bit under, and Ahsoka, a Holdo, and a General Leia that traveled together and posed, and then every once in a while there was a Poe from Last Jedi. I took a picture of like an 8-year-old kid who had like a kind of buy from the store jumper that was the young Han Solo costume.
Aww.
And I asked him, like, hey, can I take your picture? And he's like, sure. And he's like, hey, can you do a Han Solo pose? And he did the pose with the one arm out and the blaster up. And, oh, man, so great. Just so many. There was many Padmes, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing just to see the depth of love for Star Wars expressed in cosplay.
It's so impressive. I mean, I'm just impressed overall. But to see, like you said, to see it grow and to see it expand with all these new characters and what those new characters mean to new fans.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
It's always nice. Always nice. And Convergence, it's the 20th year of this convention, right?
And yeah.
It's been around. And I loved seeing the pictures of your show, sir. I will say. You looked like an absolute boss up there in front of a giant auditorium of people. It was so good. So good to see you. And I was you had posted some old pictures of yourself through the years, not just Convergence, but some had popped up on my thread. And I got to tell you something. Bearded Scrimshaw might be a thing I want to see again.
All right. Maybe that can be a Patreon level. I was bearded for a long time.
Yeah. Really?
Out of mostly laziness. And the beard would get huge, and I would be ashamed.
Oh, my gosh.
You're a distinguished gentleman, but and beards even sometimes help with that, you know? But I looked at it, I was like, God, he looks like a Han Solo in Aftermath era right there.
Well, I know you rotate, so maybe we could get in sync, so when you don't have a beard, I do, and vice versa.
Wow.
We'll work on that.
I can't help with that.
Jennifer, any adventures in your Star Wars life?
Absolutely nothing. Let's see. No, I actually looked through the Last Jedi Visual Dictionary, and I was reading through it, and my daughter was peeking over my shoulder. Of course, she had to look at the Porg page. But then I found myself, I was staring at Snoke's page, and she kind of started looking over, and I quickly changed the page because he is freaky looking. I did not want to have that conversation.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not ready not yet. Old enough for the Snoke conversation.
Is there a way that they could introduce Snoke to the children, like a fun Forces of Destiny?
That's
Snoke gets his slippers or something like that.
That's the only way. The Porg steals his slippers.
Awesome. As myself, not so much Star Wars adventures this week. I'm looking forward to Comic-Con. Looking forward to, you know, I don't think I'll be in attendance at the Clone Wars panel.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't think I'll be able to get out there, but I know a lot of people, Jennifer and I were talking before we recorded today, about people expecting an announcement. I don't think we'll get that.
Well, no. There was a tweet hinting at it.
Really?
Really?
From our friend, the voice of Raddus himself, and obviously Stephen Stanton said, who knows?
What? Wait,
would there be news about untold stories?
Mm.
I mean, all respect to Mr. Stanton, but maybe he was like, you guys got any new work for me?
I think so. I think so. And I'd love to see the continuing adventures of Meeber Gascon.
Yeah.
Indeed there. Yeah, so we'll find out a lot of things. Looking forward to Comic-Con. I'll be in the Black Series Rebels panel. Look for information on my Twitter page for that. And, you know, I know Alex and Star Wars Explained isn't there. We get to do a collab video. I'll put that out there right now. We did an Admiral Raddus video.
Nice.
And that's out there on his channel. And a lot of new ears actually probably coming this way because of that. So thanks to Raddus. Thanks to Alex. Let's dive in. Let's get started here with our Star Wars news. Jennifer, as always, you've got exhaustive notes about these wonderful stories.
There was a lot of news the past couple weeks. So the first one, according to The Hollywood Reporter, Billy Dee Williams is reprising his role as Lando Calrissian. While we haven't gotten an official announcement from Lucasfilm, sources confirmed to The Hollywood Reporter that Williams will indeed be returning to the Star Wars film franchise. This comes on the heels of the news that Billy Dee had actually just dropped out of an upcoming sci-fi and pop culture convention because of a conflict with a movie schedule. All right, when are they going to announce this? Why have they not announced this? It's gotten to the point where, you know, everyone's like, oh, he's in. And I said, well, wait a minute, ho. If there's not an announcement on StarWars.com, it still is not official.
Yeah.
But I think it's official.
I'm in exactly that same boat, where a lot of stories, you check what it, how it works logically. Sources are weird. Sources could be closer than you think, farther than you know, whatever it may be. But Joseph, this just, it makes sense, but also I want it to make sense. So I'm going to say it's unofficially official.
Yeah, I think it makes sense because it just seems like J.J. Abrams would want Billy Dee Williams to reprise Lando in episode 9.
Right.
It works for the story. So it's a pretty easy rumor to let ourselves believe. Unlike similar report, like when Spencer Wilding left a convention and everyone's like, well, Darth Vader's in Han Solo.
Right.
Like, well, that was a little bit more of a stretch.
Right.
This isn't as much of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, as you've reported before, Billy Dee Williams is exercising constantly, right?
Yes. Yeah. New diet plan, exercising multiple times a week, which having met him throughout my serving career, that is unusual.
That is unusual. And I'm glad you brought up that Spencer Wilding story, because that was a perfect example of, all right, kind of makes sense. I get it, canceling a convention, but all right, well, I guess, and then, you know, it doesn't pan out, but combined with the little checkpoints, exercising, his son playing this weird Twitter game, don't ask me, I don't know nothing, wink, you know, like all those kind of things, I think it will be official. I think we can call it that there, and I guess we can talk about what that means to the film, Jennifer, right?
Yeah, exactly, and I struggle with how much of him I want in the film. I just want a nice, juicy scene that lets Lando be Lando, let him be charming, let him do something heroic. Mm-hmm. But I don't need him to be a huge presence in this film, right?
Yeah, yeah. A bunch of scenes just filled into my mind.
Oh, yeah?
Because I want episode 9 to have a sense of war, an ongoing battle to it.
Mm.
Obviously resolve, but like I would like to see the big battle. So if there is a battle and then Lando just comes swooping in an exotic new crazy ship with another crazy co-pilot, you know, or partner like Lobot or L3 and just saves the day. And then maybe has like just a fun, quick conversation with, you know, Poe and Finn maybe about like, man, I wanted to get out of this game, but I had to come back, and just is charming for a few minutes. Like, that would be right.
That's perfect.
I'm right there with you on that for both of you. I'm conflicted with the not having the big three anymore.
Yeah.
Lando's part of the big five, I think, throwing Chewie in there as well for me at least. I don't want him overexposed, not anything of a comment on Billy Dee Williams, but just the story and the character and how it serves. And also, because of the time jump, It's safe to say Lando's the one that one of the ones that answered the call finally or is found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not going to see that necessarily unless there's some weird flashback or anything like that. I do want a time jump for 9. So it might be in a different spot. He might be General Lando again.
Yeah.
In a
yeah.
control room.
I heard the you know, he's the one who's told legends and he heard the legend of what old Luke Skywalker did. And mm-hmm. he's inspired.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be cool.
Yeah. But that's good news, though, if it's all shakes out.
Yeah. I just want a nice when he if you know, if his back is to the camera. He turns around. The camera pushes in and the audience goes wild. That's all I want.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. Star Wars is good to their fans. I think so. And mm-hmm. this year, Lucasfilm and StarWars.com are celebrating fan creativity with the Star Wars Fan Awards. They want to honor the many ways that fans express their love of a galaxy far, far away, from cosplay to fan-made films. So here are some of the categories for this new awards. Well, that's not really a show. These new awards. So you can submit videos to compete for Best Animation, Best Stop Motion, Best Comedy, Best Visual Effects. You can submit photos for Best Scene-Inspired Photo, Best Family Portrait, Best Throwback Photo, and Best Pet Photography, and Visual Art for Best Digital Art, Best Poster Art, and Best Custom Costume, just to name a few. There's a ton of categories. So check it out at StarWarsFanAwards.com for more details. I think this is really cool, but there is no best fan podcast episode, which we should have been eligible for.
Yeah, but you know what? You can submit your dog as a porg, Jennifer.
Yes.
Well, I don't think so because I was on StarWars.com. I'm sure that there is something there. But
well,
you know,
I'm sure your husband can, then, right?
yeah, right. Brian Ward, you need to submit for best photos or best art.
Best art. Handmade poster, yes.
Uh-huh. He does the best artwork.
Absolutely. That'd be a big winner in my book.
Yeah. He should submit one of those Last Jedi that's all porgs.
Yeah, exactly. But this is a really neat event. Now, I'm actually not sure if they're going to have a ceremony. Did you guys?
I
don't think so.
No, it didn't seem like it. I mean, it seemed like it would be presented on the Star Wars show.
Yeah. Oh, that's would make right. sense. There you go. That's it. Yeah.
A little shout out. In the Star Wars show, when they have, you know, it's always a great show, but when they have fun with that, like their 100th episode and everything, I could see that being a fun little thing on there.
Yeah, a lot of glory. And for those of you who don't remember, there actually used to be a Star Wars Fan Awards that was at Comic-Con, I believe. Or maybe it was at Celebration. I can't quite remember.
Was it the Fan Film Awards or was it more general like this?
No, it was the Fan Film Awards. Yeah. And so it was like best short and best feature-length film. And actually, George Lucas himself would select. I believe that he would select one of the winners.
That's so cool.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Yeah, which I think it gets lost that George had a sense of humor about Star Wars, too. Mm-hmm. You know, at least at one point, I would still say he does. But yeah, he used to sit and watch those things. They didn't shut everything down.
Not a
total cease and desist bonanza.
Well, yeah, and I think it was the total opposite of that, which is really smart. Of like, hey, if you are all going to make these films anyway, how about if we make this positive celebratory thing, which I think is great about this.
Yeah, exactly. Our friend Mark Riley was part of the Star Wars in 30 Minutes and then later Star Wars in 60 Minutes, and they got to perform a command performance for George Lucas at Skywalker Ranch because he wanted to see it. And kind of like make sure it fits in good. Mm-hmm. And then saw what it was, and he talked to him afterwards and gave his George blessing. So, you know, he has those cool flannel shirts and a great love of making fun of Star Wars.
Right. Okay, well, in casting news, is Felicity heading to Star Wars? No, not Felicity Jones, the original Felicity, Carrie Russell. Sources tell Variety that J.J. Abrams and Lucasfilm execs met with several actresses for a role in Episode 9 over the past 2 months before deciding on Carrie Russell right before the 4th of July holiday. Variety is also reporting that J.J. will likely cast 2 more actors by the time the film begins production at the end of the month. All right, so this news really spread fast. How truthful do we think this Carrie Russell rumor is? And should we speculate responsibly about the character that she's going to play?
Ooh, I don't know about how accurate it is. I don't feel like I have enough evidence to go on like the Billy Dee Williams.
I'm in the same boat. It makes sense again. I mean, they work together, right?
Yes.
Did remember going in Episode 7, a lot of people wondered if Carrie Russell was going to show up. And then kind of way, shape, or form like Greg Grunberg. So I think it makes sense, and there hasn't been a denial if it was not true.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's amazing how fast that spread, though.
Yes.
Yeah, and this came out while I was at the convention, so I wasn't on social media as much, but there was just lots and lots of debate about Ray's mom, right?
Ray's mom right away. A lot of people were actually very excited. Some people kind of were groaning, like yet another white woman who's a brunette. all right. But a lot of people were happy because she is such a fantastic actress, and she does obviously have the relationship with J.J. Abrams. They've collaborated many, many times throughout their career. So it's kind of cool, but could she be playing Ray's mom? Could she?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not not impossible
that
maybe she was buried in a pauper's grave, but she came back to life.
Or a flat for a flashback.
Flashback, yeah. But I think in that article, the initial one, they also said that they were casting a role that was action intensive, right?
Yes, that's right. And that was this role.
Yeah, so that makes me seem like if this is an actual role, if she was cast in it, that this is another warrior, either on the First Order or Resistance side, pointing again towards this is going to be a war movie.
Mm. Yeah, I don't watch The Americans, but I know a lot of people love that show, and it can get action-y, it's more of a spy thriller, all that kind of stuff, but it looks like this, she could easily fall into this kind of role, you know?
Yeah.
This isn't the old Felicity version or the great movie Waiting, Waitress, not Waiting, Waitress.
Oh, yeah, Waitress.
Yeah, so it seems like, that's why a lot of people are speculating, too, like, oh, you know, she's coming off The Americans, it's a different kind of role for her. I still think, if anything, it could be on the First Order side,
yeah,
but also it could just be hey, the ship's going in hyperspace. See ya.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I just want him now to cast Jennifer Garner, and then they can team up.
There you go.
And be ass-kicking middle-aged ladies together.
Oh,
I love that. I would love that.
Dream come true. Scree! Chewie and the Porgs are journeying to Comic-Con. Last week, Hasbro announced a new Forces of Destiny set featuring Chewbacca and Porgs that will be at San Diego Comic-Con and will be exclusive to the con. If you went to Comic-Con last year, you might have seen this Chewbacca adventure figure, displayed at the Hasbro booth. But he is now part of this set featuring two Porgs and two little Porglings that are furry, you guys. Yeah. They are furry. It's not just flocked. It's actual, it's so freaking cute. And the package recreates the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. Obviously, there's going to be limited quantities, so get ready to get in line early or pay a ridiculous price on eBay. Okay. This is interesting because people were wondering if they had just were not going to release this because we knew that the Porgs were going to be coming out. We knew that this Chewie adventure figure was supposed to come out, and then nothing.
Okay.
So this is pretty great that they're doing this for San Diego Comic-Con. Is this a must-have set for your collections?
I'm very tempted by it. I'm certainly not going to jump through whatever bizarre hoops are necessary. You know, I'm not going to sign over one of my kidneys or whatever is necessary. They're doing this new sign up online ahead of time for exclusive. Really? So you would have been in some online waiting room or something. I didn't even look into it.
So yeah, you're already out of the line then.
Already the back convention hasn't even begun and I'm already.
That's what keeps me from getting these exclusives in a lot of conventions and a lot of fun things. People are always like, hey, can I give you some money? And go, no.
Yeah, it's not like this.
It's not like that.
It's like, happen to be in Tijuana. I'll pick you up a shot glass. Yeah, it's not like that.
It's not like that. So must have, emotionally a must have.
Yeah.
We'll see if in reality that happens.
Oh, those porglings.
Chewie and the Porgs.
This is the book you're looking for. Star Wars Droidography is a new book coming November 6th that dives deep into virtually every known model of droid in the Star Wars galaxy, from L3 to IG-88. The book will tell the real story of droids from the perspective of Roger, that lovable battle droid from the Freemaker Adventures. The book is basically an encyclopedia of droids, but adding Roger's comedic, sarcastic, and compassionate voice will definitely make this informational guide a little bit more unique. So this book actually looks like a really great resource for kids and adults. Do you guys think that these kinds of books, I worry because they're not going to always be current.
Yeah.
With each new movie, each new show, they are really neat looking. But then I'm like, if this is like an encyclopedia, well, it's going to be out of date very soon. What does that mean?
I think it is just a part of the honest money machine of Star Wars. Mm. Like, I think Star Wars has deep themes, tells great stories, is important to our culture, and also it makes money.
Right.
Yeah, my father-in-law had a couple of books that he's like, you must really want these. And they were old Star Wars books, like, and half of it is legends. And like, right. I was like, all right, that's about weapons and tech and droids, and maybe I can use it to study for trivia. And I didn't want to be to my kind father-in-law. I was like, I saw these and thought you'd love those. And he was like, oh, but they're not canon anymore, father-in-law, so no. I didn't want to be like that. But then right. I cracked them open to study for the trivia schmodown, and it was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was all like the wilds of old legends, you know, and that's the nature of these things.
It, right. And even in canon, it's a great point, Jennifer, and it is part of that buy the next one, because I, at Celebration 2015, bought the new visual encyclopedia. It's great, and when you go to study now, it's got 2 years and three films not included.
Yep.
Oh. And I'm waiting for the next one. Do they wait after nine? What do they do? Because I'll buy it. It'll be on my shelf. But yeah, they always got to update, and you know, they're fun. This one sounds fun. I'm not familiar with this Freemaker droid.
Yeah.
You know, and I look at it as a good resource, because I get so confused with the new droids. Not in my life. PZ, we talked about PZ.
Yes,
PZ.
Leia's kind of personal medical droid, and everything. Like, it's not in my 40-year history of this stuff.
Right, right. I love that Roger character on Freemaker Adventures, so I might pick it up just for that, because of all the sort of wacky droids, he does have the most pathos,
he's
humanity.
So funny. My daughter and I love him. And it's a really cool looking book. The design looks really cool as well. So there's another book coming out, as we know, Thrawn Alliances, and it is a gift that keeps on giving. A couple of weeks ago, we saw cover art of young Anakin Skywalker and Thrawn striking a sexy pose and looking like a boy band. Well, now StarWars.com has shared that Padme Amidala makes an appearance in the book for a mission alongside Anakin and Thrawn. The site also shared a first look at beautiful poster art of Padme on Batuu. Yeah. That Batuu, and an excerpt from Thrawn Alliances, where Padme heads to the Batuu surface to investigate the disappearance of an old friend. It's an action-packed excerpt, and I really recommend reading it on StarWars.com if you haven't yet. Were either of you surprised to learn that Padme would be making an appearance in this book?
I was really happy for the confirmation, because the previous excerpt that they had put out, Anakin was on a mission to find Padme because something had gone wrong with her mission, I believe. So I was like, I really hope this isn't just like a passing mention, but that she's substantively in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I will say I was surprised from a certain point of view. When your excellent point, they brought her up, they mentioned her, and I think maybe I assumed it would be passing, which is what we're going to even discuss a little bit more about Padme.
Yeah.
And when this was revealed, I was like, oh yeah, hot damn, that's great. Yeah, I didn't think they would do that, which shows, I think, a change in some of their approach to some of the characters and everything, and that's good. So I'm pleasantly surprised. Shouldn't be surprised, you know.
Right.
Which again, we'll be discussing Padme today here. So I'm really excited. And then the Batuu connection, which we knew was already in the book, I'm really, really interested to see how that plays out and how much of it factors into your experience there.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, there could be whole chapters where Padme's like, how much fun is it to shop at this market? Look at all the items I can purchase at this market.
Yeah, I've got a plush version of an Ewok. I don't even know what an Ewok is.
A reasonable number of credits, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Wink, wink. Yeah. Disneyland.
Yeah. One last question about that. Do you guys think that this appearance, some people are speculating that she's going to now appear in 9. Do you guys think that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot.
No.
I'm not going to put odds on it, but I could see a world where if there is some sort of vision featuring kind of like the whole history of this family, of this saga, that there might be a flash of her.
Yeah.
Right.
Mentioned by name is high on my probability list.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Same with Vader, Palpatine, all those kind of things. I think JJ's, we're going to connect all 9 type of thing.
Yeah.
It resonates with me. But novel, connect directly to movie.
Yeah.
In a pre-episode 7 world, I think we're thinking those things more. Now, not so much.
Yeah.
So much.
Well, that's the news, guys.
That is the news. And we are going to be talking about Padme here in a second, celebrating the Queen of Naboo. So thanks, Jennifer, on the news. And now it is time for our Force Center Recommends, our audio book of the week, Joseph.
That's right, and we are recommending Thrawn. So you can, if you haven't listened to or read the first novel in this new Thrawn series, that you can get all caught up listening to the machinations of Thrawn. I really, really like this book even more than I expected to, and I can't wait for Thrawn, Alliances.
Cannot wait for Thrawn Alliances, so get caught up with this book, Thrawn, and to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook, and help support the podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
All right, Joseph, we are here at our main topic, celebrating Padme. This is something near and dear to our hearts here at Force Center. We collectively really do love this character, and it's time we focused on her.
That's right, and there is, I think, a general resurgence of appreciation for this character that's becoming very vocal if you look on the general Star Wars social media. I think I'm interested in whether it's even fair to still say that she's a controversial character. Mm-hmm. And get a little bit into maybe of our past perceptions of the characters mm-hmm. as we were watching the prequels first coming out. But I think it is really fair to say that she is an underserved character.
Yeah.
Given her prominence in the actual canon of Star Wars, that there isn't as much about her with her. And I think that's why we're seeing so much excitement that she's in the Thrawn Alliances book, that they're celebrating her enough to release a whole poster that's just featuring her. It's not her and anyone else. It's just, hey, here comes Padme, everybody. So I want to start our discussion by talking about the history of our own feelings about this character. Has there been a change over time? What was your initial reaction? All that. Ken?
I was a, and still am, a Natalie Portman fan. Beautiful Girl is one of my favorite movies. It's one of her first films following The Professional. And so, you know, when news came out that she was cast, and remember, news traveled a lot differently back then in those days. It was a lot of excitement, and I think the prequels didn't do Natalie Portman right. And there's a lot of stories behind that that we know now. But at the time, by Attack of the Clones, definitely by Sith, she's almost an afterthought in the stories themselves. And so therefore, I kind of carry that out of those prequels about, well, you know, then you'd see Closer. The movie Closer comes out around, which obviously is a different, very different style of movie. But it's like, you got this great actress, and then she comes off as so wooden, and there's no chemistry. And so my mind, the real world perceptions drowned out this character.
Yeah.
And then as time's gotten on and we've really dug in here, outside of even just the prequelist aspect of our a lot of our themes here, going back to Phantom Menace, I'm like, wow, this is a really interesting, intriguing character. And in the Star Wars world that we talk about, a lot of the focus on the fathers and all this stuff, you got this 14-year-old queen of her people willing to die, willing to fight, willing to do what needs to be done. And I think that's a real valuable thing. And then to see how it definitely ties into Leia and who Leia is and how important that is, I really do have grown to really love this character more than I did in 1999.
Yeah. Was a lot of that, we'll talk more about the Clone Wars, but was some of it spending more time with her in the Clone Wars?
Yes.
The same way, like, a lot of people came around a little bit more to Anakin if they didn't like the prequels because of more time, more nuance.
Absolutely, and Catherine Tabor's performance, they're really, really good, really good. And to, again, to spend more time with her outside of meetings. You know,
yes.
And she's got a lot of action in the prequels. Obviously, she's the queen of action. But, you know, I mean, it wasn't like by the Clone Wars, it wasn't just meeting with Bail Organa. There were stories around her, and you got to see her in action, literally and figuratively. And yeah, it definitely helped.
Awesome. Jennifer, what's your history with the character of Padme?
Yeah, basically, it's almost identical to yours, Ken. I loved Natalie Portman going into The Phantom Menace. Huge fan of hers from Beautiful Girls. And I was so excited to see what she was going to bring to this role. And I remember watching her as Queen Amidala, who my daughter loves, which is just, I'm so excited to experience these films through my daughter's eyes when we get there. But when I watched the film, and as Amidala with this headdress, to me, Natalie Portman, the actress, looks so uncomfortable, so stiff. And I know that that's part of the character. And like you're talking about, Ken, we learn about all this stuff later on, the behind the scenes things. But I felt like the film did not do her justice as the actress that I knew. And I was frustrated. And that really clouded how I watched the films. And so what was fascinating, though, is that over time, with the Clone Wars, now with Forces of Destiny, and with listening to all of the fans that love her, it's made me go back and reexamine, why do people love this character? And so I really did not know, but I appreciate that people do. And so I feel like I'm kind of now going back and repairing the hurt that I had to find out why this character is so beloved. And I think that with all this new supplemental and, you know, the books and whatnot that we're starting to see come out about her, I think that she's going to have more aspects of her character that I can dive into and really love.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet, though. Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet, but I am hopeful.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was in the same ballpark when I first saw it, of thinking Natalie Portman was a fabulous actor. But, like, I think I didn't hold any sort of stiffness or awkwardness in the performance against the character, because I remember thinking, even on, like, my first viewing, that there had been just, you know, at that point, years of jokes about Mace Windu, and is Samuel Jackson going to bring that sort of energy and that intensity? Mm. And then that first Jedi Council scene, like, I'm a prequelist, I love it, but he just really does, like, yeah, hold up the cue cards for me, George.
Yeah.
And I will just say the word. So it's like, wow, there's something going on in this process where, like, Ewan McGregor seems to be full of life, and other people are like, I'll say the words for you, George. And I still think that's a valid criticism of the prequels. But with Padme's character over the years, as I continue to watch Phantom Menace, I think that works. I think that is appropriate for Queen Amidala, that you're seeing not just the culture of the overall galaxy, you're seeing the culture of Naboo. Mm-hmm. And that this is how royals present themselves, and that there is a difference between Amidala and Queen Amidala and Padme, the alleged handmaiden,
right?
In that that is all very, very purposeful. And then I think, you know, there are various stories about exactly what went on in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. But I think if you want to be a detective for yourself, just go watch them behind the scenes of Attack of the Clones when George decided to add the droid foundry sequence in pickup shoots entirely because he didn't think there was enough action. And there's that scene of him directing Padme through this very video game scene of running on the pad and getting out of the way of the molten lava. And where Natalie Portman's like, "You're messing with me, right?" Like, she honestly, there's like this interaction where it feels like you're trying, this is a practical joke, right? So like, just look at that and make your own assumptions about what's going on in the relationship of trust between director, writer, and actor. And I think that unfortunately led to a diminished role in Revenge of the Sith. But I think with the Clone Wars and also just rewatching the prequels and separating out Padme's story from the larger story makes me appreciate the character more and more.
And quick thought too, and when we say, you know, diminished, there are, you know, read Star Wars, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, there's thoughts on that. But also, I mean, George cut out a lot of the Mon Mothma, Bail Organa storyline, the formation of the Rebellion, which would have been very Padme heavy.
Yeah.
And that I don't think has anything to do with Natalie Portman and him not getting along, anything like that. I think it's just pacing of the film,
the
too.
Running time, well as,
3-hour Revenge of the Sith we did not get.
Yeah, we can splice it together as fans. All right, so that gives us a little background on our personal feelings about Padme. I want to discuss Padme in two ways. First, I want to be sure to discuss her as her own person, because I think sometimes we really focus on her as her relationships. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about her as her own person, but then her relationships are important because it is what elevates her so much in canon that she is Anakin's partner and Luke and Leia's mother. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to watch the prequels without that weight of this is Luke and Leia's mom. So as her own person, how do you define her character? What makes her sing to you? What are your favorite moments where you can point to and like, that is a quintessential Padme moment. That's what makes her Padme, not Anakin's wife, not Luke and Leia's mom. That's what makes her Padme.
I think independently brave. And I go to the scene in Phantom Menace where you got Palpatine. Good old Sheev is starting to work his magic. He's already worked his magic. And she's like, this is your place, Senator. I'm going back.
Yeah.
And it's the only moment in Phantom Menace where I really sense Palpatine's like, what? Huh? I didn't expect you to do that.
Yeah.
And he didn't take into account that she is completely free thinking, a elected queen who takes that position seriously and is not going to sit there on a throne or in a Senate pod and hoping it works out for her people. She's going to go back to the ground. And I think that was the only time Palpatine was like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Damn it, I must adapt.
Yeah. I must shift my shifty plan around to more shiftiness. Yeah. Jennifer, do you want to go?
Yeah, I think that what I find so fascinating about Padme is how she exudes a strength through elegance. She exudes this strength as Amidala and as Padme and as Natalie Portman, this elegant, beautiful actress. And yet she is not afraid to spring into action. And she shows that you can be a strong leader. I don't want to say strong female character, but you know, something, a force to be reckoned with without having to resort to being to exuding masculine traits or being uber tough. She doesn't have to do that. She exudes that through her elegance. And that's what I really appreciate about the character, is that it gives us a different type of heroine in the same vein of Princess Leia.
Yeah.
It's really a nice, beautiful, it's beautiful poetry, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I think for me that the sense that she is a defiant pacifist, mm-hmm. who is going to look for the best way to solve the problem, the political way to solve the problem, to heal things, to make things better for everyone. But then when she gets pushed, she immediately pushes back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think her arc in Phantom Menace, I won't condone, you know, a course of action that will lead us to war, that has this great rhythm with, but I do keep a blaster in my throne just in case.
Yeah.
And when it comes to it, I will use it. And we keep seeing that again and again, where she is going to stand up and fight for absolutely what she believes in, and is very pragmatic in the I'm going to fight for it politically. And then when I run out of options and there is no other choice but to fight back, to me, that's like one of the huge themes of Star Wars is when do you choose to fight? Mm-hmm. And Padme is one of like the clearest characters who feels like she is on top of it and has this knowledge and this morality and this checklist of like, I'm going to try every other option. And then the blaster is coming out. Mm-hmm. And like even in the Geonosis Arena scene in Petronaki Arena where she's like, well, I could freak out. I could turn to the Jedi. I could, you know, yell about how this is against all sorts of treaties. But instead, I'm just getting my lockpick out because a big cat's going to murder me.
Right.
And that is my concern right now. And I'm going to take care of that. And then later we will deal with the ramifications.
Which is which is a great moment when Obi-Wan got his like, look at her.
I think she's going. I think she's doing fine. Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to point out is just that level of sacrifice and duty. I love the in Attack of the Clones, the specificity of the people wanted her to continue. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, I shouldn't. That's not the best politically. Yeah. It's not the best for the people of Naboo. But then the next queen is like, but can you be senator? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get that sense from other moments that maybe she would like a private life.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of her connection to Anakin of like, I come from a big family. I want a life of my own, but I'm being asked to serve, so I will.
Yeah.
Unflinchingly, constantly.
That sacrifice is very palpable, which is why, you know, sometimes she's on that balcony like, wow, maybe we should have never left Naboo, Anakin.
Yeah.
And it's like the rock star that sacrifices a normal life in a family to have a 40-year career in rock and roll,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
She answered a higher calling, and the weight of that is always sad. Padme is a sadder character. That memory that Leia has, which we now know is a little convoluted by Lucas changing a little bit what he might have intended in 1973, and he makes this, you know, but, you know, Leia saying she was beautiful but sad. I think that he did do a great job of translating that into Padme in the prequels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful, kind, but sad, right?
Beautiful, kind, but sad, and that's what she is. And Attack the Clones, fine, Anakin, you have to protect me. I'm going to this planet. I'm a queen of action, but it does have a cost, you know?
Yeah. All right, so now that we talked a little bit about how we perceive her just independently as her own character, her own person, let's talk about how we perceive her relationships with these other big Star Wars characters. First, let's talk about, the big Shaq, the big butt cow in the room, her relationship with Anakin. Now, we, of course, can criticize it, as many Star Wars fans have, the way it's depicted in Attack of the Clones. But what are the highlights for you, either in Attack of the Clones or going on when we get to see much more of their relationship in Clone Wars and Forces of Destiny even? Mm-hmm. What are the highlights of that romance?
Romance. Well, see, the highlight for me is actually not the romance. It is the Phantom Menace when she is meeting young Anakin and the sweetness that she has, but also that, you know, the older kid vibe that she, you know, I'm no more than you, kid. But there but there is a compassion, and the fact that she does listen to him even though he is a slave child, that she there are some excellent qualities that she exudes in her relationship with him in the beginning. It is a little creepy if you think
about it.
But for me, that was a highlight of seeing these two young people just bonding, a queen and a slave.
Yeah.
And finding common ground. And also her kind of being impressed by him.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something neat about that.
Yeah. I think one of the things that she was so impressed by is his kindness.
Yeah.
Because there is that whole story of Anakin saying to Shmi, like you say, the biggest problem is that nobody helps each other. Mm. And as convoluted as the story is about how they need to get off Tatooine, from Padme's perspective, that's what this young, innocent boy who's living in a bad situation, it's like, I want to drop everything and take a huge personal risk. I could die in this pod race to help people.
Yes.
And I feel like that, you know, you have to kind of remember that going forward into Attack of the Clones.
Right.
That she knew that young, innocent kid. And I think one of the strongest things to me in Attack of the Clones is that despite all the weird things that Anakin says and the things that your mileage may vary, to me, come off a little tone deaf where Anakin seems creepy instead of romantic. That's just my opinion. I know other people love it, and I understand that. But even when it gets down to the I killed them all,
mm-hmm.
she is seeing this wounded person that she wants to help.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the story could have been told better, but also this kind of dangerous, roguish, attractive guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Padme has dated lots of uptight proper boys.
Yeah.
As we get to see in the Clone Wars, which is really awesome. And then you see, like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was dating, like, the straight-A students of the galaxy.
Yeah.
And then she sees this kind of dangerous, exciting guy who she also knows to be, underneath it all, a kind person who has legitimate wounds and she wants to help him. Mm-hmm. Like, that, to me, I think is some of the power of their relationship.
Yeah, I think some of the better stuff does develop in the Clone Wars. You see it more on a smaller level. We get to grow with them on the show there.
Yeah.
But as yeah, absolutely, you know, George missed on some of the beats in Attack of the Clones particularly. I think if you take away the dialogue in the arena, you have one of the most beautiful scenes in Star Wars. You still do. But I never want to lose the intent of what I think George was trying to do. He just, you know, needed Carrie to do a little bit more Ghost Rider. But what that story was trying to tell, I mean, you know, tall, dark, and brooding, and he's got this weight. And Padme, number one, has the right to fall for who she wants to fall for, but also struggles with it, clearly doesn't want to because she is pragmatic and connects back to, it's a great connection, Jennifer, actually, to the Phantom Menace where he, you know, his soul is on display there. And I think he is at times through the for me as well, Joseph, the lens of looking back, he does come off as a little bit of like, I'm going to stare at you and I'm a little creepy and
yeah.
and somewhat inappropriate. But I think the intent of George was to tell this tumultuous soul, Anakin, and seeking comfort from this stronger character and, you know, whether it's just, she wants to, it's not just to me, I'm going to help the bad boy, but there's some of those tropes are there, but I think George's intentions were really good with this sweeping romance and it made sense to me, just not executed as well. But I think later on in the Clone Wars, you really do see it.
Yeah.
And it really plays out well.
Yeah. I can't remember all of the permutations, but there's the episode where a bunch of senators are held hostage
yes.
by Cad Bane
oh,
and
yeah.
she has Anakin's lightsaber. Because they were having, like, this fun conversation. Yeah. He was basically, hey, check out my lightsaber. Mm-hmm. Like, those moments of connection and intimacy and also highlighting that, like,
yeah.
there is the pull of a romance that should not be. Mm-hmm. For someone who has always been duty-bound.
Yeah.
To be like, I love this person. He shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do this. But,
Yeah.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Padme being Luke and Leia's mom. How do we see Padme in Luke and Leia?
I definitely see Padme in Leia. Leia's ability to lead, but still, you know, showing kindness, like we just talked about, wanting to help people. I immediately go to Leia, Princess of Alderaan, where mm-hmm. Leia, you know, takes a risk because she wants to help and free these people who are being oppressed. So yeah, it's amazing how much of Padme is in Leia. With Luke, I don't see her as much, maybe hopefulness, I suppose, the hope that Luke has, the optimism, wanting to see the good in people, perhaps. What
yeah.
do you guys think?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, there's been a discussion around, like, sometimes you see more Anakin in Leia and more Padme in Luke. And I
yeah.
think when people say that, I think it, to me, there's something really emotive about the kind but sad. That sounds like Luke. Like, you know, I can, like, when Luke is sad about Obi-Wan Kenobi's passing. And Leia's like, yep, I'll comfort you. Even though my entire planet was just destroyed, I've got my armor on, and I will just march forward and lock down my emotions and be there for you. And Luke, how could you describe the look on Luke's face as anything but kind but sad, right?
Yeah.
And there's something to me about the emotive side of Padme that's really visible in Luke.
Mm.
Yeah, I see the connection stronger with Leia and everything, but I think a little column A, a little column B with both of them there. And you know, Anakin's in Leia as well, just with some of that fearlessness, a little bit of anger,
yeah,
a little bit. Definitely, Luke, the emotional side. Luke definitely has that Skywalker, kind of thing. But I think Lucas did a great job of connecting that regalness of Padme to Leia, but also being of the people. And it's really on display in Princess of Alderaan. Claudia Gray, as always, does such a great job. But I really, it's no coincidence. I think it's beyond just how she looks that Panaka sees her in that dress and is like, wait a minute.
Right.
I know you.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
who you are.
I served you. Yeah.
Based
yeah.
on what you're doing and how you look, it all connects. So I think it's there. It's definitely there. It isn't just she's their mom. Check the box. There's a good connective thread.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts on the Luke and Leia relationship to Padme? Are there distinctions between Padme and Leia for you? Because the connections are so clearly there that Padme, we get to see again and again, as a head of state and somebody mm-hmm. who understands protocol and getting the right Jogan fruit for the right ambassador, and things that we get to see Leia do, not so much in the movies, but in all of her expanded mm-hmm. Fiction, we get to see that side of Leia. Is there something that makes Padme different from Leia?
I think more formal training in a way. You know, Leia started to get Princess of Alderaan is very much Leia going through formal stuff on Alderaan. But it seems like she didn't have time to go to finishing school. You know,
yes.
The war started. She was on a blockade runner getting the hell out of Dodge. And Padme, even though she started so young, it's one of the things I love about the Plagueis novel that's no longer canon, is you do touch upon this young girl from the Nabiri family that's kind of being groomed and pushed into politics.
Yeah.
Not pushed, but like groomed for this line of work. So Padme's got, she's the standard bearer of what's going on in Leia. Eventually gets there. She's regal. That shot in Last Jedi of her looking out on Crait and everything is so, to me, is a very Padme-like feel.
Kind but sad.
Kind but sad, regal, powerful, but on the field of action right there in the battle. But you know what I mean? Like Padme graduated college. Leia didn't have time to. She couldn't because the war had begun.
Yeah.
That's the best description. That's the best. I mean, Leia is just more rebellious.
Yeah.
She is a rebel. Ha ha. But she she really is. I mean, and so it's like, it's funny because she has those moments of being so regal. And yet, like mm-hmm. you're saying, there's just a little bit of a not rougher edge. I can't mm-hmm. describe it. Just a little bit more like willing to improvise or.
I think because Carrie Fisher is so Leia.
Yes, there you go.
You get this sense that Padme would be like, it's Friday night. We'll have a sip of wine where Leia's like, I'm getting drunk.
And then I'll pull it together in the morning somehow.
Yeah, and I say that with
my feet. Yeah.
All respect to Carrie's struggles and everything in life, but that nature until her very end was this independent spirit. And I think that really comes into the play in the character of Leia.
Yeah, it's literally in the last shot where she decides to have a shot of whiskey before she goes to this important meeting. Yeah. For me, I think it's on the cutting room floor, but there's a little bit that makes Padme different because she comes from this large and loving family
mm-hmm.
that, you know, people from big families are used to negotiating, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to. In Leia, Princess of Alderaan, we really get that sense of like, I am a single child with two doting parents. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different sort of environment mm-hmm. to grow up in. And I think all that cutting room floor stuff of her, not only with her family, but then also building the beginning of the rebellion. That's a kid who comes from a big family.
Yeah. And for a moment on this Attack of the Clones deleted scenes where she goes home, if you've ever seen them, I'm sure they're on YouTube. I don't think they're on the actual discs, but I could be mistaken. I have an older copy of Attack of the Clones. Some of it's awkward, deleted scene stuff, but I don't think the dialogue, it doesn't play out as well and everything. But I love some of the moments in the middle of all the stuff going on. There's still her family kind of like, tell us again, what's going on with the guy?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Nothing's going on with the guy. And I love Padme being able to have that real human moment because she's been wearing this crown literally and figuratively for a long time and all this stuff. And I like that her mom and sister are like, no. Tell us about the guy. What's going on? And that was a fun moment for me, too, that it doesn't make it to the final movie.
Yeah, I mean, man, those deleted scenes are great, where Anakin and his future and father-in-law are just kind of having a walk in the garden with awkward political conversations.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes,
beautiful. All right, so another thing that comes up with the character of Padme very, very much is her passing in Revenge of the Sith. Not only that it doesn't quite match what Leia described of remembering her mother. We have our own headcanon for that. But I want to talk about what are our personal theories or headcanons about why and how Padme died. Do we have headcanon that we feel like honors the character of Padme, or do we just not? And again, to quote the analysis droid, it's that they can't find a reason mm-hmm. that she's dying.
I think there's always some unexplained in life, right? And I think so it is in Star Wars, and you got the Force and all that kind of stuff. It could have just been this tremendous soul crushing. I don't know if the force, I don't say the force is calling her home, because why would you do that force and leave these two kids motherless?
Yeah.
You know, I like the novel, the Return of the Jedi novel version of Padme was, you know, what we now know as Padme was alive and took Leia to Alderaan. You know, George wanted to change his mind and I respect it, whatever. That's another headcanon. But as far as her death, I look at it as it's some kind of bigger reason with the force. You know?
Okay.
I don't know.
That's good. I like that. I think that we've done some counseling on this. I think you have, Joseph.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but whatever you said, it was great. and it makes sense. It's interesting because the whole thing of dying of a broken heart is an interesting concept. And then, unfortunately, with Carrie Fisher and her mom, Debbie Fisher, who did pass soon after Carrie did. And people were saying she died of a broken heart. And never did anyone say, oh, that she's Debbie Fisher. Debbie Reynolds is weak. Or you would never say that, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think it gave me a different perspective on this notion of dying of a broken heart. Because it happens. And so... Yeah, maybe I'm making peace with that, because it was something that I did find problematic.
Yeah.
About why would she leave her children that should give her the strength?
And I remember, I'm glad I don't write Star Wars movies. At the time, I remember thinking, I wish there had been a fight. I wish she'd been more physical proof. And I'm like, wait, I wanted Anakin to assault her. Like,
right,
I'm stupid. That I wouldn't want that. But I remember at the time feeling, you do feel a little like, that's it?
Yeah.
That's it? Mm-hmm. How does Leia... And then in the theater in 2005, you're like, but so how does Leia remember? And that was the first... And you get stuck on that. And now years later, I can look back and the cosmic forces at play in a lot of things.
Yeah, because I think we use Died of a Broken Heart as shorthand, which then sometimes people have a problem with, because her final words is that she believes they're still good in Anakin. Mm-hmm. And what I believe the analysis droid actually says is she's lost the will to live.
Right.
And we shorthand that to Broken Heart, which then doesn't really jibe with what her actual last words are.
Mm-hmm.
And we know her to be a fighter. So for me, I think I'm almost interested in this headcanon of... She is a little physically injured. She's emotionally injured. Maybe there's some creepy Palpatine dark side connection. There are all those theories of like her life force is going to Anakin. They've had their mirrored surgery. I don't think that's explicit in the movie. That's my opinion. But, you know, I'm interested in some headcanon of like, does she have to give in some force way some of her power to Luke and Leia to survive?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that's a premature birth, right? I mean,
I mean, it's
brought on by trauma.
I naturally return to you, Jennifer, on this kind of issue. Yeah, it definitely seems, you know, it was close to the finish line anyways, but all of a sudden the body was like, we need to do this.
Right.
You know, maybe the force was like, we need to do this.
Yeah, exactly. No, that makes complete sense, especially if she was already injured. And so, but then at the same, you cannot have Anakin kill her,
right?
I mean, you just can't have that. So it's a very delicate line.
Right. So yeah, you're right. I shouldn't say I don't want it to be that. Yeah, no, he choked her like if there is a this is not an interpretation of the movie. This is utter headcanon to make this character, you know, be the character that you want to see. I like the idea that it makes sense to me that she would give her strength, that she would sacrifice herself for these children.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like that.
And then if she could keep going, she could get through to Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real, to hear you even say it now and plainly and wonderfully as you just did, that is a powerful moment then, if you can look at it from that sense. If you want to get hung up on broken heart thing or anything, which I think are all legitimately valid things, but the character of Padme is carried out from beginning to end in this way, and that's something that she might do even if she was consciously aware of it. You must give yourself up so these children can live. She might have chosen that on her own, you know what I mean? And so it is kind of a bittersweet, beautiful moment and leads to the redemption of the galaxy, the saving of the galaxy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we've talked around it a little bit, but I want to highlight Padme in Clone Wars and Forces of Destiny. Do we have specific favorite moments of the character in those Star Wars stories?
There's actually so many in the Clone Wars that I'm struggling without having gone through and watching them all to give you a specific Clone Wars moment. You definitely, the one where they're kidnapped is is Cad Bane kidnaps him, and traps him, or whatever, holds him hostage. I do love that kind of stuff. It's all the little moments that goes out. The Force is a Destiny one, Jennifer, though. Yeah. That's more fresh in our minds.
Yeah, exactly. That's I was struggling with the Clone Wars as well. It's been so long, but I do love the Forces of Destiny episodes. I love the imposter inside where she teams up with Ahsoka.
Yeah.
I love the monster. What is it? The monster.
Misunderstanding.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Because we really see her compassion and her instincts come into play in that short little episode.
Yeah.
That is something that my daughter watched and immediately got, the baby, you know, like it's a beautiful little slice of this character.
And Star Wars at its best, preaching, talking to the young kids, mm-hmm. going, hey, look, you don't always shoot the monster. Sometimes there might be a reason for the monster. Figure it out. And here comes Padme.
Yeah.
Wise queen to tell you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The monster misunderstanding was going to be one of my examples too, because it's got the great Star Wars from a certain point of view of let's try looking at this from a different point of view. And it also ties into, I think, her feelings for Anakin of like, hey, maybe it's something that looks monstrous on the surface, like screaming that I just killed them all. Maybe it's not a monster if we look at it from the right perspective and reach out and help. A lot of great Padme arcs, I think. There's the arc where Aurra Sing is trying to kill her.
Yeah.
And she is traveling with Ahsoka. I think just in general in the Clone Wars, it's great to see so many of the nitty-gritty politics, that she understands the politics, and that everyone is always trying to kill her. And she's always like, I'll deal with it. Just always.
Just a breakfast, lunch, assassination attempt, dinner.
Yep, that's Padme's life in the Clone Wars.
Can I just say, Cat? Tabber? Yeah. Oh, shout out to her. She really has made this character. I mean, she has made me like this character a lot because of the performances that she's given. So, yay. Thank you.
Yeah. Pat. And it's an accomplishment because I think it's building on what Natalie Portman did too. It's not like this was wrong, so let's just go over here.
Let's just erase it. No.
Totally building on it.
Taking that foundation and making the character even greater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what kind of stories do we want to see with Padme in the future, like what media and what kind of stories?
The quote unquote young Padme novel, that rumor popped up.
Yes, it did.
And I'll say this because we had on Jedi Council did the story and we did a mock up of the cover. Right?
Ooh,
Like hey, here's what it would look like based off kind of the Princess of Alderaan. Someone wrote me, and I can't remember, so I can't. It's not that I don't want to reveal. I can't remember. Someone's like, yeah, my friend's designing that and thought that they had released it already when he saw your guys' picture.
What?
And that's a year ago?
Yeah. Oh.
And we haven't heard a thing.
Oh.
We haven't heard a thing. So it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder what happened with it, but I still think we're going to get it. And that's what I want. I want to see what James Luceno hinted at in Plagueis. The young track of a politician in Naboo, which was something that, you know, she was not the youngest queen, right?
I think
there was at least one more. She's one of them for sure. But it wasn't abnormal that a young, 13, 14 year old girl on Naboo would be queen or go into politics. What got her to that point? And I'd really like to see that story, a little bit more of her family, some of that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think at this point, with that great series of YA novels, if they don't release a Padme one, it's like a sin of omission at this point, because they have one on Ahsoka. On Leia, Kira is featured prominently. We have so many of the central women characters of Star Wars being highlighted in those books that I would love to see that. It would be interesting to see on Naboo, but I'd also be happy to see like another Clone Wars adventure, or maybe an adventure, how she becomes a senator, or maybe we tell a little bit more of the story of the beginning of the rebellion from her perspective during the events of Revenge of the Sith. All sorts of, I think, interesting stories to tell with her. Jennifer?
I really wish that she was alive. how do we do that? You know why? It's because I love Natalie Portman so much, and I feel like she was already a fantastic actress at such a young age, and she has only become better with everything that she does and becoming a mom. I listened to a podcast with her recently, and she just has a real I don't want to say an effort attitude. And I think if she were to be brought back to Star Wars, I would love to see what she would do with her performance now. Mm. Like being so comfortable with who she is as a woman and who she is as an actress. oh, I think it could be so great. I wish there was a way. Yeah. She's a clone. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, with all due respect to the creator, George. Yeah,
with all due respect to George.
Giving her an actor's director with Star Wars. Now, I totally understand. Joseph, you hit on something, though, here. Can we get this going? All right. You're friends with Jody Houser, right?
Yeah.
Can you get this pitched? I want a 5-issue Padme comic set against Revenge of the Sith of her and Bail, Mon Mothma, and the formation of the Rebel Alliance, or the early days.
Oh, there you go.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's good.
From another perspective.
There are a plethora of writers in the Star Wars world who love to do what I think of as Star Wars cleanup, right? Claudia Gray, you know, has those great lines about, this is why Leia was affecting a British accent on the Death Star, to make fun of Tarkin.
Yes.
We got Chuck Wendig, who's like, I'm going back for Jar Jar. I'm going to patch him up. You know, I'm going to make
beautiful
his
stuff.
Story make sense. A bunch of them have pitched, like, we want to tell why Kylo is named Ben Solo when he was born. And Lucasfilm was like, not yet. So there's no shortage. Jody has dropped great details in her comics that flesh things out. So has Gary Whitta. There's no shortage of people who I think would love to tell like the story of Revenge of the Sith from Padme's perspective and maybe flesh out the formation of the rebellion and her passing.
Yeah,
and I'm so fascinated if Lucasfilm would ever want to do that, want to just let somebody run and go like, play around with looking at the canon from a different point of view for fans of Padme.
On that level, because I think the book, from a certain point of view, they do that, but it gets heavy, the Yoda, Obi-Wan stuff. But, you know, we have fun with the gunk or the mouse droid and everything like that. But could they take George's movie and add this, reinsert those deleted scenes with a whole bunch more? Oh, man, how do we get that going?
Juicy, juicy stuff. All right, I realized that I should, while we were talking, I realized that we could not get through this without asking this question. A huge part of the legacy of Padme is the most amazing and exotic costumes featured in Star Wars, right? Yeah. So let's talk favorite outfit for Padme.
Oh. Ken?
Well, one of my favorite shots in Star Wars has always been, since February of 99 when the trailer first came out, is the dress with the lights.
Yeah.
And the camera slowly zooming in and on her as she looks out the window. I mean, that is a legacy shot. And it was beautiful then. It's beautiful now. It's not one of the more functional outfits. You know? I also do love, for just comic reasons, unintentional comedy, because the first time I saw it in the theater, in Attack of the Clones, where they do the fast cut and it's her and Anakin on the couch and she's got that black leather.
Yeah.
She's and
the whole audience, when I was so went, oh.
Yeah. There's a lot of storytelling to be had with that. You know, the moment where Leia goes to her wardrobe and like, all right, kind of feeling this romance, but we probably shouldn't. What should I wear to the fireplace? I'm gonna choose this. There's some storytelling to be had.
I love that one.
There are so many great outfits. That beautiful purple, like rainbow kind of dress that she wears, I believe, in Attack of the Clones. It's so romantic with her, you know, hair very wavy and flowing. But I do love the Queen Amidala headdress with the painted makeup and the red. My daughter loves this image so much, and she just will stare at it, and so that's really given me a new love for that costume that I told you guys, I was, it's a little too stiff, and now I'm like, I love it. And I want to get dolls where she's wearing that costume so my daughter can play with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that stiffness has like a power of like, do not mess with me. I'm just going to calmly state what's going on. You will respect me. I have several orbs at the bottom of my dress. pre-Nexu midriff cut, which I know is a whole conversation, I do actually just like her very functional Attack of the Clones outfit.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's when I see people cosplaying a lot. It's got great rhythms with Leia's original dress in A New Hope with the pure white.
A lot of Hoth Leia action from it. Like Bespin, when she's in a little jumpsuit after she kind of gets out of the red dress.
Yeah.
There's a connection there too, yeah.
Yeah, and I also like, from Phantom Menace, partially because it was in a video game where you got to play Padme a lot, I like her, it's kind of a frilly black dress that she basically puts on to surrender, because she has to the Trade Federation.
I
love her defiant, like, all right, I'm going to select a specific dress to briefly capitulate to this invasion, which I have no intention of actually tolerating, but I will briefly wear my kind of large FU dress to get off the planet.
I love it. I love it. Her surrender dress, you know, and it is, you can have some fun with, man, when does she have time to change these outfits? I mean, she's got this handmaiden team around her. They can switch her. It's part of it. But each one having its own little purpose.
Yeah.
And her way to use her fashion to communicate who she is and what her intentions might be is very fascinating to
me. Yeah. And I know from discussing this on Star Wars Minute that there are devoted cosplayers who have names for each and every one of her costumes. Yeah. Which is so great.
I cannot, of course, forget to mention one of my favorites is Pregnant Padme. I saw a pregnant Padme cosplayer. It's the brown kind of tunic and the leggings. Let me tell you, as a woman who's been pregnant, this is a comfortable looking outfit. I want to wear it now. It's just, I love it. And there's not very many costumes that you can cosplay when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
So. Does her universe have like a line of
maternity
clothes?
No. She should.
All right, Ashley, if you're listening, you know. Make it happen.
Oh, you totally reminded me of one of my favorite cosplay things I saw at Convergence was a woman had made her own BB-8 maternity dress, a pregnant woman where she just painted the BB-8 stylings. It was hilarious. All right, we're going to close out our Padme conversation with this question. If you could, in real life, would you want to have handmaidens / bodyguards? Ken was going to say no, but he's questioning.
I was going to say no because I'm such a loner.
Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty hard where you have just like a bunch of people who vaguely look at you kind of hanging around like you're just making a burger and people are popping like, do you need anything, Mr. Knapsack?
Yeah, and I've had the experience of I've guarded Pink, Jewel, and Mini Driver.
Wow.
All right, I've escorted them around and been protection for them. I'd rather do that. And otherwise, I'd be alone. I'd want to walk into a Carl's Jr. alone.
Okay.
I don't want to have to. I mean, I'd be very nice to the Royal Guard if they're with me. I'd be like, hey, Bob, you want something? But I just would rather go alone.
Okay. Fair enough.
If I was in a position of power or a celebrity, absolutely I'd want handmaidens by my side. I imagine it like my group of girlfriends that I have, where they look out for me. They always have my back. They're going to tell me if there's something in my teeth. They're also going to let me know if, like, this person seems really shady. You know, because there's a lot of hangers on. There's a lot of people when you're a person in power that they want to, you know, whisper in your ear. So you need to have that kind of like not just physical barrier. You need that emotional barrier of people that are going to let you know. Don't trust that guy.
Yeah.
The concept of handmaidens is very interesting. It plays out very interesting in Game of Thrones as well. Any type of like medieval political kind of ruler. It is because they're more than just, can you fetch me a bowl of water?
It is.
And then with Padme, they're trained killers.
Exactly. You know,
don't let them fool you.
Yeah. I think there is something about, I'm definitely a loner. I just like, when I'm done, I love social interaction, but when I'm done, I just want to be alone with Battlefront 2. I don't need, four people who look like me going, are you sure you want to do that? Yeah. Is that where you want to put Bossk's proximity mines? Is that the smartest decision, sir? I don't want that. But I think the most appealing thing to me is the idea of having somebody who can cosplay as this regal version of you, and then you can be like the calm, quiet version of you and see the truth of how people treat you when they think you have power how they treat you when they think you're no one.
Yep.
That is powerful, and I think one of the best parts of Phantom Menace is that you Jedi assume too much.
Yeah.
You know, and even Qui-Gon that we think of as intuitive and smart and thoughtful is just totally bamboozled by this political tradition, this security tradition of Naboo specifically. Like, I don't think Naboo tells everybody when they join the Galactic Senate, like, by the way, this is our tradition. Like, they do this on purpose so they can suss out how are you really going to treat people?
That is a great moment that is not, I think, you know, Padme bowing before Boss Nass is one of my more least favorite moments. It's a little bit of an awkward delivery of the line. Not Natalie's fault, I don't think. But I'd love the follow-up of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan look at each other. Because I think they're both like, got us.
Yep. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Super dumb Jedi moment. Yep. We've been bad Jedi these last few days. All right. Any final thoughts on Padme? Or should we leave it at a celebration of handmaidens and sussing out the real treatment of people in the galaxy?
Peace Orb.
Peace or. I just, you know, I hope if you haven't, if you listen to this and you haven't really thought about Padme in this way, I hope we open up your mind a little bit to what Padme is and means to the Star Wars universe. And I think it's a wonderful character. And I can't imagine being, say, a 12-year-old girl, not that it, George didn't intend this message to 12-year-olds to go one way or the other, but to give this look, well, if you're in a theater in 1999, or you're sitting down now, your daughter now in a decade or so, Jen, where she looks and has this powerful queen mm-hmm. in front of her making these decisions, I think it's a powerful part of Star Wars that we can't overlook, and Padme has that great value.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so we end our conversation with thunderous applause.
Yeah. And from there we go. Thank you, Joseph.
Absolutely.
To audience questions. All right. We take these questions from Twitter. We take them from Patreon. We take them also from Facebook. Let's see what the grab bag of questions has for us today. First one is from Wine101, CSW at Wine1011. I now want some wine.
I know, me too.
They write, even though I would love the idea of it, do you really think the unknown regions will be the new frontier, quote unquote, to carry Star Wars for generations to come beyond the Skywalker saga? Love the show. Well, we love you, 101. What do we think? I totally understand the spirit of this question. I think it's great, Joseph. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that the big question is Rian Johnson's trilogy and what choice is going to be made if Rian Johnson truly says this is not going to have any connection to characters or places that have come before, then my mind goes to the unknown regions, because I think that's a relatively open story. But I think it also could be that Wine 101 is right, and we shouldn't be hanging every guess on the unknown regions, and that maybe it will just be a story of a small system of planets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I do think at this point, whether plans are in motion or it's just that Dave Filoni has thrown his leather hat on top of this idea, that there are more stories to be told in the unknown regions with the search for Ezra, who I think went to the unknown regions.
Yeah.
I mean, there's unresolved storytelling that many of us fans guess is in the unknown regions. So I think we're going to get that eventually. Certainly Snoke's rise, First Order's rise eventually.
Yeah.
But will we get everything in the future in Star Wars happening there? I agree, we shouldn't.
Yeah, I definitely agree we shouldn't, Jen.
Yeah, I agree that we shouldn't. In fact, I kind of thought of it was just going to be like a sprinkling of the unknown regions going forward. But now that you made that point with Dave Filoni, I think we are going to be getting a lot more content, more stories about the unknown regions. There is a lot to explore.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough.
See, there's a lot to explore, and as it relates specifically to Snoke, his mute alien navigators.
Yeah.
In Last Jedi. Intrigue me to no end. A lot of it. So I want stories out there. But what 101's asking, this core question, is this new frontier that we're going to send a lot of stories here? I don't think so. And I don't want to, because I think this galaxy is big enough. Batuu, we now see this new planet's created, and we're going to have a lot of cool things happen there. Octu is actually in like wild space, unknown region. So is Ilum. We've already kind of been there. Not to the full extent. And I like, what happens when you get out there? There's just space whales flying around, and it's this whole weird alternate universe. I don't think so. I think a lot of the stories still will be told in the Star Wars galaxy we know.
Yeah.
I think. All right. Next question, also from Twitter. This is Renee Carbajal, longtime listener, at Gramp Caramba. Yes, it's a great question here. Is blue milk a force suppressant? And is green milk maximum strength?
I love this.
Now, I've been playing a lot of Fortnite.
Yeah.
You get your little shield potions, and, you know, they each have different powers and meanings. So I'm going along with that regard. Jennifer, do you think there's some differences in the blue milk and the green milk?
I never thought of this, Renee, but I love it. I kind of see the green milk like wheatgrass or something packed with a lot of nutrients. Or is it more like a Red Bull? I don't know. This is great.
I love the idea that the Thal Siren would generate Red Bull. And Luke's just alone on Octu, just kind of jittering with energy. All I have to drink is Red Bull from the Thal Siren.
Oh,
I think this is so funny. Longtime Legend of Zelda player, you know, you get the different colored potions and they have different effects. This is so great. But, you know, this opens up such huge issues in canon. If this was true and you got Aunt Beru on purpose.
Oh, God.
Constantly serving a force suppressant to Luke Skywalker. Oh. Like, he is going to stay on the farm.
Yeah.
He is not going to have any feelings or intuitions.
And then that holds true in Rogue One, yep. where Galen's probably telling Lyra, I want Jyn to have some blue milk because yep. I don't want her to get involved.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The blue milk is for staying at home.
And Lyra's like, I'm going to give her this necklace.
That's really troubling, actually, that all the parents of the galaxy would be doing that to their children. Yes.
Or that they don't even know it, but Palpatine at one point put into market this force suppressant milk.
Oh yeah. My gosh. He manipulated the midichlorians. Yeah. Of animals that produce blue milk.
We're going to put fluoride in the water and force suppressant in the milk. Their teeth will rot and the Jedi will not rise.
Oh my gosh.
Love that. Great question, Renee. Now we go to Patreon. We always take two questions from our Patreon page. We'll tell you how to find that page at the end of the show. Kirk Heisig asks this question. Pick a character from The Muppets to appear in a galaxy far, far away. He adds, much to my dismay, not any of the pigs in space, because that would have been the answer. What kind of role would they play, i.e. Pepe the King Prawn as a Sith Lord, or Camilla the Chicken as a bounty hunter, or Oscar the Grouch as a Dianoga? As a Muppets, lifelong Muppets fan, who still needs to get up to that Henson display at Skirball Center.
Oh, so good.
Lifelong Muppets fan, watched it on Saturday nights with my dad, watched Muppet Babies, love it, and it is tied to Star Wars. Those Muppet Baby Star Wars episodes are great. Jennifer, this is a great question. What's your answer?
This is just a no-brainer. I immediately think of Rizzo the Rat, who is on the new Muppet Babies show. He's great. And so who better to team up with Rizzo than Salacious B. Crumb?
This
is just a natural fit. Can you imagine the hijinks that would ensue between those two? Oh, the pranks they would pull. I love it. Yeah. I want to make it happen now.
That is really, really great.
I like that. Mr. Scrimshaw?
I want, in episode 9, like we were talking about, Lando Calrissian swoops in to save the day with his new co-pilot, Gonzo.
His
little hands flying over the control.
From the unknown regions.
Yeah, from the unknown regions. Nobody knows what Gonzo is. And even Lando will be like, I don't know what he is, but he's great behind, you know, the controls of a Corellian starship. That would be great. I would love that. Or if there was eventually do get Old Republic, if there is just a shot of hundreds of Jedi and one of them with no explanation holding a lightsaber, it's Fozzie Bear.
Oh,
Fozzie Bear Jedi.
Fozzie, Waka Waka.
Fozzie. Waka Waka, Fozzie Bear Jedi, way in the background.
I was going to think maybe Fozzie in the cantina, but I have two answers here. One, it's pretty simple and direct, but Snuffleupagus from Sesame Street as a bantha.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So that way, the long nights in the desert, you can talk to him. And is he really there? You don't know.
Yeah, nobody believes Luke. Ooh, yeah. He saw Snuffleupagus.
No. I met a bantha and he talked to me. Sure, kid. Drink more blue milk. But the other one, if maybe somewhere in Mos Eisley, Mos Espa, maybe Coruscant, doesn't matter. Wherever you find a good freighter pilot, I want Beauregard, the taxi driver. I'm Beauregard. He'd be a good guy to get you from planet to planet. There.
That's a beautiful answer.
Thank you, Kirk. A lot of memories in the Muppet questions. Matthew Z. Reed asks, what are your thoughts on having mechas in the vein of Pacific Rim or Gundam Robotech, my favorite, of course, in Star Wars? Personally, I would not like it, but I'm obsessed with them lately, so what do you all think? So this is mechas, basically. You take a human pilot and put them in some big gear that's like a big robot that also might transform into a jet. Joseph, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't want it to be an ever-present thing, but I'm all about it if it's introduced in the right way of this is the way a specific culture experimented with technology.
Ooh.
It was done in a real Star Wars way. I go to that Battlefront 2 novel where they are researching these old stone droids, right?
Yes.
And different ideas of how technology looks to different people.
Yeah.
Especially since the Star Wars Resistance cartoon is going to be in an anime style. I'd love a sort of fun episode where they discover some planet, maybe in the unknown regions or at the edge of space, some corner of Batuu where a specific society experimented with. Well, instead of just flying in these, what if we tried to wear our starfighters? I would be interested in that. Got to be really careful to not upset the aesthetic apple cart But if it was done right, I think it'd be kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's like those weird crossover toys you see sometimes, like a TIE fighter that transforms into Vader.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Jennifer?
Yeah, immediately I think the only place it might work would be a Forces of Destiny episode. Mm. We kind of got that in the one with Ahsoka where she's trying to rush to the Jedi Temple for her ceremony. And there's like that malfunctioning giant droid robot that's causing, wreaking havoc throughout the city. So maybe there it might work. I don't know.
Yeah, as much as I'm a fan of Robotech, I agree with you, Matthew. It's something I wouldn't want to see on a large scale. On a small scale, yeah. Could I imagine that at some point the Empire decided, like, what if we were to take a stormtrooper and kind of make a stormtrooper-sized walker?
Yeah.
You know, and you're in the center, you control it, and you can walk along, and it's got arms, and it's, you know, I could see that.
Yeah. But it immediately doesn't work and just crushes the stormtrooper. Yeah. And that's all we ever hear of it.
And if it's, you know, force related or something, and it's tied into the midichlorians of the pilot, you know, all this kind of, you know, that stuff. But again, like you said, the aesthetic apple cart of Star Wars would be tipped over and the apples falling onto the floor. And I don't want that. But hey, at least I got my Robotech. Thank you for the questions, Matthew, Kirk, Renee, and Wine 101. We appreciate them. We love hearing directly from you guys. And there's ways to do it on Twitter. You can reach us on Force Center Pod. On Instagram, Force Center Pod. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We have the website, forcecenterpod.podomatic.net. Merch is always available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Tweet us your merch picks and we'll reshare them. We had a few this past week. Podcasts available a lot of places, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play and Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Podomatic Mobile as well. And on Patreon, Joseph, we had a lot of fun recording a little commentary the other day that will be out soon. That's where we're making things happen.
That's right. You can go to patreon.com/ForceCenter to check out what we're offering. And as Ken was just saying, we recorded our commentary for Dramatic Ellipsis, The Last Jedi. And we had so much fun. It was just electrifying to get to talk about it while watching the movie. And our next goal on Patreon that we're pretty close to is unlocking commentary for every Star Wars movie. We will do them all, including the holiday special.
Yay!
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the Ewok movies. We won't. That might be a separate goal. Caravan of Courage might be its own separate goal to unlock. But we're loving doing the commentary. We're releasing them as audios to our patrons and then to everybody on YouTube. So if you're interested in that, you get access to our monthly bonus patron show called Finish the Fan Fiction. Info on all of that is at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Thank you so much for helping us out and helping us keep going here on the podcast.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube. We're releasing more little content pieces, Databank Brawl, more things coming. Subscribe there if you haven't. We are almost out of here on the supersized edition, an edition worthy of a Queen of Naboo. Don't forget Comic-Con this Friday. Joseph and I will be there. Meetup, 4 p.m. Friday. Look for the location on our Twitter page. Jennifer, we're almost out of here, but what do you got going on?
You can find me on all the social media sites at Jennifer Landa, and be sure to check out my latest Happy Beeps where I talk about how to maintain your Star Wars joy. And George Lucas himself, well, he doesn't really make an appearance, so to speak, but I do dissect what he talks about, the difference between pleasure and joy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Does he talk about flannel?
No.
That's okay.
That is both a pleasure
and a joy.
Yes.
Mr. Scrimshaw, you and I got comedy this Friday night in Comic-Con as well, but you are always cooking up some wonderful stuff.
Yeah, try to keep myself busy. You can find me on social media, Twitter and Instagram in particular is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com. That has my comedy albums, including the Star Wars one, my other podcast, Obsessed, and live shows. Always got a lot of live shows going on. Ken mentioned San Diego. Also, if you're in Los Angeles, I've got my monthly show called Game Night Variety Show. Again, go to the old website, look at the live shows page.
Absolutely. You can follow me at Kednapsock. That includes Instagram TV with my Monday through Friday daily motivations to fail at getting through the week and fail at being motivated. Check them out. That is it. Let us know your thoughts on Padme. Reach out to us. And if we see you at Comic-Con, it's going to be a lot of fun. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.